Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Wherever you are and whenever you're listening, this is Terry Brown, the co-host of the Winfrey Show, introducing Winfrey. He's out rounding up the conference line, people. We have a conference line that's on, connected with the radio show, where people call in and then they can talk on the conference line. And so Win is rounding them up, and then they patch him in, and so we have a simulcast, which is partly a conference call line and partly the BBS radio line. So welcome, everybody, on BBS radio, and the conference line should be with us in just a minute. They aren't hearing us yet unless they're with us. Win, are you here with us yet? Nope, he's still out rounding up the people for the conference call. We have a section on BBS radio for transcripts, and Seth is going to be putting up the transcripts. We have a person named Connie who's doing the transcribing, and I edit the transcriptions. And so we've been doing this since 2007, and we're going to be making the transcripts available on the BBS Radio Archives section. A person can subscribe to BBS Radio and then can go in and look at the archives or can listen to the broadcasts. They have audios up there, and they can listen to the audios of all of the shows that they have on BBS Radio. So we're very happy to be connected with BBS Radio, and very happy to welcome each and every one of you tonight on the radio show. We've been bringing up topics. Win chooses a topic, and then we discuss it extemporaneously. I don't do any preparation for this, but he has me very often. He has me channel answers that come up to questions that he may have or information on topics that he brings up on BBS Radio. And the topics can be very varied, like how did the universe get created, who's the Elohim, how does one connect with the Elohim and the Ra groups, what is their energy like. And even if one's just reading a transcript, they can feel the frequencies in the transcripts. Win wrote a book, and I edited it along with David Wilcock, The Reincarnation of Edgar Cayce, and it carries the frequencies of the Ra group. So the Ra group is a group of individuals who had a third dimension experience, a life in the third dimension, and then were later graduated, and they became an other side group that can help people in the third dimension who are looking for answers and are seeking growth. The Elohim is a group that most of them never took bodies, and they are on the other side, and they're a very high frequency. They're a very high frequency group of individuals' energies, and it has different departments in it. One of them is Grace, which spreads an energy upon things, usually if a person asks, either silently or they don't even have to do it in words, to help them get through situations and can bypass the laws of the physical universe, as some of the DW40 or the energy that they are able to project into situations can ease up locked belief systems or locked energy and can release a person. Some people feel that they have to work through all their karma. When one goes beyond, there is a way that they can bypass karma. Anyway, is when on yet? We don't hear him. Usually when he comes in, we can hear the dings of people coming on the call. There's these, like, ding, like, little bells. And then we hear somebody coming on the call, and that way I know he's there. So he usually can't just sneak in. But I don't hear him yet. So today is January 9th, 2012, and we've made it to 2012, and there's many predictions for 2012. Some of them are very, very good, and then there's some that some people that predict dire consequences, like earth changes. So it will be an interesting year to see what's happening. And it's a year that we can have much growth in, as the economic system is experiencing difficulties. And this is something that has been predicted in the reincarnation of Edgar Cayce, the book. For those of you that don't know, the reincarnation of Edgar Cayce is a book with three parts. The first part is the question whether Edgar Cayce has reincarnated, and whether David could possibly be the reincarnation of Edgar Cayce. Now, Edgar Cayce was a psychic that lived in the last century, and he was very, very accurate. And he would be able to go to sleep, and when he was asleep, he would bring through information that was recorded by a secretary, and his wife was also present. And the information then was written down, and it provided a great deal of information for people, and formulas, herbal formulas, healing formulas, which are still sold in health food stores today and used today. Castor oil packs is one such thing. We still don't hear Wynn on the line, so let's ask, Wynn, are you here yet? We're both in Sedona, and he's in the other end of the house, and I can hear him talking on the phone. So he may be waiting for Seth to patch him in, or he may be still collecting people on the conference call line. So the reincarnation, the first part of the book, The Reincarnation of Edgar Cayce, is like, whether or not Edgar Cayce could have reincarnated as David Wilcock. And it lists all of these things, names all of the things that they have in common. For instance, Edgar Cayce and David Wilcock look alike. It sounds like maybe Wynn might be coming on. Hello, Wynn?
We're spying on you.
Oh, yes. How long have you been spying?
Not very long.
I didn't think so. Ladies and gentlemen, Winfrey.
Now, listen, how do you know they're ladies and gentlemen?
Well,
do you want to qualify our listeners as ladies and gentlemen? You know, Grits in Tennessee would never like to be identified as a gentleman, okay?
Who?
Chris. He loves Jim Morrison, okay?
Yes, what would he like to be classified as?
I don't know, we'd have to ask him, but I know gentleman wouldn't fit. So, I would like to just mention, ladies and gentlemen, it's maybe not the best way to address our public. But it's okay. I'm just giving you a tough time. I'm sure nobody got mad at you for calling them a gentleman or a lady.
All right.
I mean, I don't think I like to be called a gentleman. Makes me sound too
nice. Do you like to be called?
I don't like to be called. I'd rather do the calling. if somebody had to call me, I'd say, Wynn. Call me Wynn.
Yeah.
Now, on the very first channeling from Daphne, they called me Mr. Wynn. Remember?
Mr. Wynn,
right.
Well, we could say good evening, Joe. Good evening, Zoe. Good evening, Chris. Good evening.
Well, then we have the multitude that's listening to us on the internet, and you know what they're all thinking? They're thinking, why are they doing this BS when we could be listening to the Elohim?
Oh, I see.
That's what they think. Okay.
Yeah, but maybe they don't think that. Maybe they like to listen to you.
Well, there's a few that do. Of course, if we were going to listen to the Elohim, you know what the topic is tonight? Did you see the email?
No, I didn't.
The topic is wisdom versus information. You inspired that topic tonight.
I did.
Is it possible for you to get Teddy Lauder on the conference line?
Hold on, Liz. I'm going to try something that might disconnect me. I'm going to put the earphone on.
Oh, okay, just a moment.
Hello, can you hear me now?
We hear you now. I don't know if you're louder, though.
Is this better, Heiss?
Yes, it's better, yes. Thank you.
Okay.
Good.
Gary and I were having a fight earlier. Was that a fight? Would you call it a fight?
Well, you could call it a fight, yeah.
I mean, if anyone was looking at it, they'd say it was a fight, right?
Right.
How does it look when we have a fight?
Well,
it probably was a disagreement, or not?
Well, I don't know if it was a disagreement. It wouldn't go that far. It was like I was blowing my stack, and she was blowing her stack back at me. Now, it's easy for me to blow my stack, but when I get Terry to blow her stack, it's really good. And the funny thing about it is, because of the work we've done, we can be in the middle of blowing our stack. Now, just follow this, because this can help you guys. We can be in the middle of blowing our stack, and suddenly our eyes will catch each other, and this smile comes across us, and we look and we say, isn't this funny? We're blowing our stack.
Right.
Does that describe it, Terry?
Yeah, it's like there's all this affinity over all of it.
Yeah, but the thing is, it's a moment of, like, we know we're playing a worldly, a worldly drama, but we're not taking it seriously. So we just go through it. But if anyone looked at us, we look fierce, okay? At least I do, right?
Yes, you do.
And you look kind of fierce, not quite as fierce as me, right? Would you say?
I see. I don't know. Probably not.
No, you need more practice. Fierce practice, okay? It's all our Sunday morning solar plexus activity. Okay. That is strengthening my power chakra, right?
Yeah.
So, in any case, what it is like being able to see things multidimensionally, being able to see them on different levels. So, when something is happening on one level, you can immediately jump to another level and then back again. It's very interesting to learn how to do that. And, you know, part of our disagreement was actually the topic for tonight, and Terry didn't know it. And
Was it the topic for tonight before that?
Yeah, I sent it out before that, okay?
Oh, really?
Because the topic is wisdom versus information. And Terry had been telling me that she came into this realm to get information, to understand how it worked. And I said that, you know, just going around getting information might get you in trouble because you have to learn about things that are not positive, and you end up at the wrong place at the wrong time because you're curious, and then you have 100,000 years of screwed-up lifetimes because something happened. Now, that actually occurred for Terry, that, you know, she went into things and something hit the fan, and she ended up fairly screwed up for a lot of lifetimes. And she didn't know she was screwed up.
But the thing of it is, I went into this to find out why people got screwed up in this dimension. And I found out...
You had to get screwed up to learn it, right?
Well, for some reason, I wasn't trying to get screwed up, but for some reason, I got really screwed up.
So, this is really the topic of our call tonight, because, you know, if you come in to do something, the first time you do it and you get screwed up, you get the information. But if you don't get the wisdom, you're going to do it again, okay? It's the wisdom that gives you the discernment, that gives you the overview of looking at something so you don't have to keep doing it. The information is kind of satisfying a curiosity factor. You know, we did
so
this.
If you have to, like, in order to get unscrewed up, you have to figure out all of the things that are involved in getting screwed up and how to get unscrewed up, and it leads to great wisdom.
Yeah, well, that's true. I think if you actually figure it out, you get some wisdom attached to it, okay?
Yeah.
But I will tell you, the amazing thing is that now that I happen to have some idea of some of the things I've done in my track, everyone says, tell us. No, maybe some other day. And some of the people that I've known in the track meaning the track of reincarnational lifetimes, and I can see how people, in spite of getting all the information and knowledge, how they are so prone to repeat the same lessons over and over again. And in fact, when the information comes, which they could use to reorient themselves, they discard the information, even when it's in their face, because they want to repeat the lesson on some level. So, information. What's the difference between information and wisdom? Okay, like I was thinking, what's a good example of that? You could study astrology, and you could find out that on a day that when the moon is in Aquarius, you're more friendly, okay? I'm just using that as an example. It's probably true, but I'm not trying to be astrological here. I'm just giving you an example. The day the moon is in Aquarius, you're more friendly. Now, that's the information. The wisdom might be, this is a good day to meet new people. This is a good day to hang out in places where you might meet someone to love. And now you've added the wisdom. Wisdom has got to be applicable information that you can add to your life. But wisdom is more than that. It's more than that. There's an aspect of humans that have all this information of their experience in their life. They have it. Everyone knows the information. It's somewhere there. Even if you have Alzheimer's, it's somewhere there. So if, for example, I had a fight with so-and-so yesterday, and the day before I did this, and the day before I did that, and you're reading the newspapers and you're getting all this information from the newspapers. But are you integrating the information? Believe it or not, there's patterns in information. There's big patterns in it. And when you can look at information and group it together in patterns, you can now understand some aspect of cause and effect. And that understanding becomes wisdom. And when you learn that, now when you meet other people and you know them for a bit, you start to see their patterns, and you can impart what you've learned about these patterns and how they repeat, and you can say something to them that can change their life forever. Because otherwise, people keep repeating patterns. They can't see the big picture. They don't usually look for the repetition of patterns, which is what leads to wisdom. And wisdom allows a person to grow and become larger than their patterns. And then, of course, there's new patterns. And then there's new patterns on top of those. So it's always a process of looking and observing the patterns till they become, so you understand what causes those things to occur. Because otherwise, they're just events. They're just events, and they go to the next event, and you don't realize it's an event that's repeating, because by the time it starts to repeat, it was a while back, and you have to start over again. So one of my favorite English poets, who I sometimes quote, that when I was younger, I read this, and this is one of those pieces of wisdom that I pondered about for a long time, because it was so much different from what I thought in my conscious mind or understood in my conscious mind. Do you know, in my conscious mind, in that period of my life, I was thinking, I was into spiritual things. I was a spiritual seeker, and I was looking for something that would work for me. And I was attending this workshop, I was attending this teacher, attending lectures and going around. And I was being fairly virtuous at the time. And by virtuous, I meant, you know, like, there was a period when I went through thinking I was supposed to be celibate, because so many teachings talk about celibacy, that I said there must be something to it. That was being virtuous. And being kind, doing all the things, being nice. And then I read this quote from William Blake, and he said, "The path of excess leads to the palace of wisdom. The path of excess leads to the palace of wisdom." And I had to think about that for about 2 years. And I said, finally said, I understand that. I understand the truth in that. The path of excess leads to the palace of wisdom. Wisdom is the ability to put patterns together and see them from an overview. And if you're in this realm, you have patterns, and the people around you have patterns. Our sources call them gross repeating patterns. The realm has patterns, the whole realm. And, you know, it's a pattern where it blows itself up, and then it comes back as another planet hundreds of thousands of years later. And this battle between negative and positive that we talk about keeps repeating. And if you want to grow, if you want to shift and change, you need to see your patterns. You need to look at your patterns. Some of you think that the Elohim can talk to you and suddenly everything changes. You know what? Sometimes they'll say something where they can look at your patterns, and it'll click you in. And as soon as you can observe your own patterns, as soon as you can do it, you start to shift. It's the beginning of a shift. It can happen fast, or it can happen over a while, but it's the beginning of a shift when you can see your patterns. So what's an example of seeing your patterns? What kind of patterns do people go through that I should open? If I had the moderator thing here, I'd open the mic, but I think it'll get too complicated. I'd let people talk about some of the patterns they go through and that they're able to see. It's the pattern. And remember, there's patterns you can see, but the most important patterns are the ones you can't see. Okay, I'll give an example. Terry will go along with this. She can give an example, and I'll give an example out of my own life. When I was younger, I had a lot of self-rejection. My shoulders were up to my ears. I was closed down, and it felt like that's how it was to be alive. I didn't know I could change. I didn't know that that was not who I am. And I am sure there's many people that are listening right now that are in that experience. You're in a spot where you're not necessarily happy, and you're stuck, but you think that's who you are, okay? And you are so used to feeling that way. The possibility that you could shift that particular aspect of how you feel doesn't even seem possible. Well, what happened to me is I was really, really stuck, really stuck. But there were moments when I got unstuck. And one of those moments was when I displayed leadership. And the other moment was when I hitchhiked and played music. And so when I was in high school, I displayed leadership because I was president of the Ham Radio Club. And I actually, when I was 15 years old, I took my club, maybe 16, 15 or 16, I was young, and I took my club and every year, ham radio operators have something which they call Field Day, where they go out and set up tents, and they They spend 24 hours in their tents with generators and transmitters, and they start talking to people all over the world, and they see who can talk to the most people. So my radio club went on field day. Now, of course, now we have to find a place to go. I went and knocked on the door of this very nice high school in the suburbs of Philadelphia, and I presented this idea to the principal, and he said, okay. I couldn't believe it. And so my whole radio club, I think we had about 10 people, went and set up our tents, and we spent the whole weekend talking to people in this field. And somehow in doing that, my self-rejection left me. I was displaying leadership. I didn't really make the connection at that time. It took me a long time to do it. But that was a huge kind of milestone in my development, that weekend where I convinced this very formal, upscale suburban school, I convinced them to let me set up transmitters in their gardens, so to speak. Now, you know what? When I went to college, I took all my transmitters with me. I set them up. And then I quickly lost interest in ham radio when I started playing music. And my renewed interest in talking to beings that were people that were far away got renewed with Daphne when we started talking to people without star people, and we didn't even need transmitters. So that was a great advance. So that was one thing. And the other thing was when I was hitchhiking, and I got into the adventure of being on the road, and it was so exciting, and I was giving to people. Really, it wasn't the hitchhiking. It was playing music and showing up and just being this vagabond and having no attachments, and people giving me a lot of love because I was doing that. But I didn't know how to stop. Whenever I would stop, I would lose it. I had to be in the flow of that to stay in it. And eventually I had this reading from somebody that told me about a past life that I was had lived before, where I was a troubadour and my father in this life killed me. And suddenly I realized that's the complexity of the way things work, because they told me I chose this father because I wanted a life in this time period, and he owed me a life so I could get one through him. And that's how I chose to be born in Philadelphia. But even though I chose it, it was not a happy childhood because he was constantly killing me. And constantly saying I was no good, I was unworthy. No matter what I did, he would be mad at me. And I couldn't please him. And when I was 18, I was so happy to leave home and go to California to go to school at Berkeley. And the wisdom that I started to apply when I had this reading, the reading was information, but the wisdom that I started to apply to my life was, number one, now I knew why I put out this rejection thing, because my father rejected me. And that, number two, I had to forgive him for killing me in that other lifetime. And number three, this is a biggie. Those of you that have had adversarial childhoods, listen to this one carefully. Number three was, I chose my father because I wanted a lifetime now. So I chose all those circumstances. Because once I realized that I chose him, once I realized that, it made everything else workable. So I chose the set of circumstances. I chose to have a father that would reject me. I chose all those obstacles, so I'd have to overcome them. And it wasn't just a random act that I ended up with this really difficult father. And so that was the wisdom that I chose him. And that was a big aha experience. And some of you that have grown up in adversarial circumstances might apply that and start to realize, on some level, you chose that circumstance, and figure out why you chose it and what you were supposed to learn from it, and it'll help a lot in releasing it. Because if you just curse the situation, my parents screwed me up, or this or that, then you're doomed to keep repeating it. You don't learn the lesson. You can't blame things outside of yourself for your circumstances. It's the path of excess that leads to the palace of wisdom. When I went to Berkeley, what did I do? I started doing substances. Everyone was doing it. I spent 2 years probably in that experience. Finally, I realized that I was naturally spaced out, and whatever I was doing was making me so spaced out that I was dysfunctional. So I stopped. Now I know what those things do. If I talk to somebody, I know how to counsel them. I can tell how it can make someone dysfunctional. Now, maybe that won't be true for everyone, but it was certainly true for me. And when I stopped, I got more functional. On that note, we have to stop at 7 tonight, for sure, okay? Because they got another show after us, Terry. Are you on the line?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, this is time for you to confess.
Your ham radio experience reminded me. It's like whenever I do something new, I just freak out because there's 100 ways to do it wrong. And so when I became a ham radio operator and I put up my antenna, and I was terrified of getting on the air and talking to everybody, but I made myself do it. And we were talking Morse code, and so nobody answered. So I'd do my call letters and Morse code, and I'd send out my signal, and I'd wait for responses, and nobody ever responded. And so probably 6 months later, I would still be sitting down and sending out messages, but by then, I wasn't scared anymore because I figured no one would ever respond. And so then I discovered that my antenna was grounded and the signal wasn't really going out. And so we fixed it, and then I was trying very hard to send out messages, but I wasn't scared anymore because I was so used to doing it and having nobody respond. And people started responding. So I have this pattern when I start to do something that's totally new. There are so many chances to make a mistake. And whenever I make a mistake, then I just get really upset with myself. And also, when other people get mad at me, which happens when I make a mistake sometimes, it happened very often when I was a kid, I make some kind of mistake or break a dish, and the dishes were all like famous dishes that were worth hundreds of dollars. And so when I broke a dish, it was a really big deal. And I get this pain in my back, and I just get so upset. And then later I realized that in my last life death, when I was dying, there was somebody that killed me, and this person that killed me was screaming at me that everything was my fault. And so when somebody would get mad at me, I'd get this horrible pain in my back, and I'd just get really upset. And it opened up a lot of vistas for me to remember what happened in my past. But there was this pattern, and realizing that it was instigated by this last life death when this person that killed me was absolutely furious with me. It's gradually been revealing more insights about my patterns, and wind's been rubbing that area of my back when that happens, and it feels like I'm coming through it and I'm breaking the pattern. So anyway, that's one of my patterns that I've had going.
Now we've had people that, you know, being preoccupied with past lives is not that important because they're not here now. Of course, sometimes people want to know, was I somebody famous? What did I do? And that's not usually important. It could be if a pattern developed when you were famous, because you were famous. And maybe you have a pattern of being very aristocratic if you happen to have been queen. And unconsciously, people perceive you as you're looking down on them. And they don't know, when you were a queen, that was okay. But this lifetime, you're not a queen, but you're still carrying that demeanor as if you were a queen. And so there is a value if you've had something established in a past life, like you were killed. Say, for example, there's other lifetimes when I've done something similar to what I'm doing now. And many people who are kind of, they have advanced awarenesses, have done things to exhibit their advanced awareness. They think they're trying to help people. But when you do that, you confront everybody's reality system, and certain people will really like it, and others feel really threatened. And so oftentimes, people have gotten killed, including me, including Terry. So there's a fear of doing it subconsciously, and it needs to be done with a lot of wisdom so that you can respect other people's reality systems without thrusting something on them that they would suddenly hate you. If you notice, when we do these calls, I don't want anyone to believe that we're talking to the Elohim. I say the voice that identifies itself as that. And I share my experiences. That way, I don't have to be some special kind of dude or exalted. I'm just a guy in the middle of a bunch of experiences. And the best way for someone to introduce themselves to this is learn about all those experiences and see if it resonates, where they get curious and reach back, and where they might say to themselves, if these guys might be who they say they are, maybe I can learn something from hearing their communications or reading their communications. And then if you start doing that, you start getting your own experience, or not, depending, and you come to your own conclusions. So I'm not saying for someone to believe something. And by doing it in that way, it creates a lot more protection. because I don't have to make a claim and say, believe this, which then confronts reality systems. So many of you who are listening were at the effect of that, that you got curious, you started reading the transcripts, started coming into the calls regularly, and something started to move inside you. That's the key. It really doesn't matter who we're talking to until you internalize it and it becomes an inner movement inside yourself and a growth inside yourself. And part of me has been watching this carefully because that validates the value of what we're doing, okay? So wisdom has to do with observing patterns and integrating them so that you can see the law that you have been following. When I say the law, I mean the law unto your being, and then move to a higher law. And sometimes when it's exactly right, you end up having an aha experience, a flash, an intuition, and you start to put things together. And at that moment, you start lifting your vibration and start on the beginning of a path of awakening. And then the new awakening will have its patterns to it, and you keep observing those, and you get to the next place of awakening. And this is how someone spiritually advances. If you're there just saying, give me information, if you think information can change you, not my experience that it works that way. Information can help you begin the process of seeing patterns, but information in of itself doesn't transform you. The information for me was that this guy killed me in another life, and he was my father. Now, I had to integrate that and see, okay, I had to choose him. I had to forgive him. He killed me. He had a reason for killing me. I had to empathize with his reason for killing me, even though it may have been really unfair, an unfair punishment for what I did. In his mind, it was reasonable. And many of you are involved in relationships, and the relationships are stuck because there's a pattern that keeps repeating itself. And you're involved in the pattern, and you can't see it. And oftentimes, when that's the case, first thing you do is blame the other person. They're doing something to you. And I've watched this. Maybe some of you have watched this. People who are involved in a relationship and think that someone's doing something to them, oftentimes, when the relationship finally breaks up and they're free, within a very short while, they get involved with someone else, and after the romantic phase, it's the same pattern, repeated, and it goes on and on. Because until you see the pattern, you are stuck in the pattern. And that works on every level. So wisdom is the ability to start seeing patterns, repetitive patterns that are controlling you, that you take for granted and you think it is you, but it isn't. In truth, if we take what we know, we've learned on these calls, what I've learned, each one of us, everyone, no one is not included, is a part of all it is. Everyone has a piece of divinity inside them. Everyone is a child of God. You want to use that terminology. And that everyone has that potential to experience that on a very personal level. Everyone has the ability to transmit that to other people and help wake other people up. Not by giving them information, but by releasing your own blocks so that you move into that experience and you can radiate that love in a way that people get it. And when you radiate love, people around you, and that's different than being nice. That's different than wearing your heart on your sleeve. When you radiate love, you give other people the chance to grow. You give other people the chance to upgrade their DNA, and people will shift. Everyone listening to this call has that ability. All you have to do is get over your patterns of who you think you are that have been tracked down from past lifetimes at infinity, you know, way back, and you carry the pattern. Keep coming back, you're holding the same pattern. You know, coming into these calls and paying attention to this work is really a effective way of getting through your patterns, because on these calls, there is a lot of unconditional love. And if you notice, you can feel that love even though we never met each other. Even though we've never seen each other, it radiates on the call. We have this idea that there's these sources out there that have been talking to us that are able to make you feel loved just between you and them, even without another person. Some of you have been learning that. So, those are all real possibilities, and if you're feeling stuck, a really good thing to do is to read all our emails, pay attention to everything we're doing, because that energy is in the cracks, it's in between, and I'm learning that. I wouldn't have believed that if somebody told me that that was even possible, but as we've been doing it, I see it's not only possible, it's happening. And we have only 3 minutes, and Terry was really tired, so maybe we won't do a channeling tonight on this topic. But I think we covered it pretty well. I will say that that one of the things that I think that there is a value of learning your past lives or the ones that are majorly impacting this one. If you can learn about patterns that were established and how they got established, okay, so you can understand better what your hang-ups are. If anyone is interested in a reading, email me. We've seen that happen to other people. So on that note, it's 7:54. Seth is saying we have to wrap it up. Terry is saying, God, I didn't have to overactivate my pituitary gland on this call. Terry really does get spaced out when we do these things, and she needs to be kept like a great oh, precious being that we're so blessed to have. You want to say anything goodbye before we say goodbye?
Just my love to everybody.
All right. And, you know, on the ET workshop that we did, we ran it 2 times. People still missed it. We're going to run it again next week. And it was really good. A lot of great information and also wisdom on how to cope with the fact that we are not alone and there's beings from other dimensions and other planets that are buzzing our planet. And it's good to know what their agendas are. So on that note, I'm going to say goodbye to everybody. And Hives, if you're listening, you can stop the tape recorder